Bhagavata Pataya Pashkata Satan His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jayam Vishnu Bhattam Hamsa Parivaja Kachari His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Gajraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gorgamani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, the Summum Bonum, Chapter 52, Rukmini's Message to Krishna, Text 26. Tadivetya sita pangi Vaidabhidurmana visham Achintyaptam dvijam kanchit Krishnaya pahino dutam Tadivedya sita pangi Vaidarbhi durmana brisham Achintyaptam dvija kanchit Krishnaya prahinod dutam Tadivetya sita pangi Vaidabhi durmana brisham Vichintyaptam dvijam kanchit Krishnaya prahinod dutam
That.
Ivetya. Knowing. Asita. Dark. Apangi. The corners of whose eyes. Vaidabhi. The princess of Vaidarbha. Dormana. Unhappy. Prisham, very much. Vichintya, thinking. Aptam, reliable. Vijam, Brahmana. Kanchit, ascertain. Krishnaya, to Krishna. Prahinod, sent. Drutam, with haste. Translation by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Dark-eyed Vidarbhi was aware of this plan and had deeply upset her. Analyzing the situation, she quickly sent a trustworthy Brahmana to Krishna. So just for those who may not have been following the narration and not know exactly where we are, in Bhagavatam this is the episode where Rukmini is going to be married to somebody other than Krishna, and she's very upset about that, Shishupal. And then she sends a letter to Krishna, who she has heard so much about, to try and encourage him to come and take her as his wife. So we'll just read a few verses here. So she was aware of the plan that she was to be married to Shishupal, but she wasn't happy with that. So she's now found a trustworthy Brahmana, and she's going to give him a mission. Upon reaching Dwarka, the Brahmana was brought inside by the gatekeepers and saw the primeval personality of Godhead sitting on a golden throne. Seeing the Brahmanas, Sri Krishna, Lord of the Brahmanas, came down from his throne and seated him. Then the Lord worshipped him just as he himself is worshipped by the demigods. After the Brahmana had eaten and rested, Sri Krishna, the goal of saintly devotees, came forward, and while massaging the Brahmana's feet with his own hands, he patiently questioned him as follows. The Supreme Lord said, O best of exalted Brahmanas, are your religious practices sanctioned by senior authorities proceeding without great difficulty? Is your mind fully satisfied? Purport. Here we have translated the word dharma as religious practice, although this does not fully convey the Sanskrit sense of the word. Krishna did not appear within a secular society. The people in Vedic times could hardly imagine a society that did not understand the need to obey God's laws. Thus, to them, the word dharma conveyed a sense of duty in general, higher principles, prescribed duty, and so on. It was automatically understood that such duties were within a religious context. But religion in those days was not a specific aspect or department of life, but rather a guiding light for all activities. Religious life was considered demoniac, and God's hand was seen in everything. Om Jnana Timinandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmalitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hari Hari. So the drama is unfolding. The messenger is deployed. Brahmana, the trustworthy Brahmana, has been sent and has arrived at Krishna's palace. Now Krishna, being the exalted personality that he is, was sitting on a nice throne. But the Brahmana, upon entering, Krishna jumped up and went and took the Brahmana by the hand, seated him on his throne and began to massage his feet and offer various types of worship. And before questioning him. So, although Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he appears within a certain context, within the Vedic context, which has a certain way of doing things, certain etiquette. And as an example, to everybody who is bound in the material world, he acts according to this context. You know, he does his duty. And also, he values that. He values the Vedic system. I mean, in the spiritual world, the Vedic system is there. Krishna, especially in Goloka Vrindavan, he's living in a cowherd village, but it's a Vedic cowherd village. They're doing things in the Vedic way. The Vedic cultural elements are there. Krishna has no problem with that. He values his own system that he set up enough that he'll submit himself to it. It's not like, I'll set up some system, but because I'm supreme and transcendental, I'll just do whatever I want. But everybody else, they should follow that. No, he's a leader in the ultimate sense of the word. And therefore, he has integrity. What he set up for others, he does himself. So here he is worshipping the Brahmana because he wants to exalt the Brahmana, the spiritual intellectual, the person whose life is 100% devoted to pursuit of the absolute truth. He wants to honor that, hold that up. And then he is questioning, O best of the exalted Brahmanas, are your religious practices sanctioned by senior authorities proceeding without great difficulty? Is your mind always fully satisfied? It's always appropriate to question a person according to their particular lifestyle and their particular values. And that's different for different in the Vedic context, you can say varnas, different Brahmins have different values, different ashrams have different values, different priorities at certain times of life. But even in general, if you know somebody, you generally question according to what they value. So a Brahmana, of course, their main thing is to do their religious practices, their devotions, their worship, and their mind should be very pacified, because in a pacified mind situated in Sattva-guna, one can ascertain the true nature of things and think in a high way. Simple living, high thinking. This is basically a Brahminical motto. So Krishna is appropriately questioning. And in the purport, Sridhiyananda Das Goswami, he's this is a particular thing I've noticed from listening to his lectures, that a particular point that he likes to make is the depth of the idea which is Dharma. Dharma is not a shallow idea. And when he said here, this is a classic statement by him, here we have translated the word Dharma as religious practice. Although this does not fully convey the Sanskrit sense of the word. You know, he's a Sanskrit scholar. So, you know, and that's a frustration, because Dharma is such a deep and profound concept. You can't sum it up with some, you know, in a single way, because it means so many different things. It's such a deep thing, Dharma. And the point he makes in his purport here is that in the Vedic society, Dharma is the way of life. It's not that life is departmentalized, like you have your material life, you know, you run around making money and having a family and all this stuff, and you call this your mundane life, and then you just, and then you have to switch modes at some point, you know, you switch modes, change, and you go into a worship, prayerful, meditate and things. And then you have to go back to your material life, and this kind of like, it's a departmentalized thing, you have to switch between one and another. And neither has much to do with the other. No, that's a disintegrated way of life. Dharma, in the true sense of the term, means the way of things. The way things are, the way things work. And our understanding that, along with that comes a certain way of acting and behaving, getting into action. If you understand yourself, what is your dharma, nature, that's another word, another meaning. If you understand your nature and that nature of the bigger picture you're a part of, the existential situation, if you understand that, those two things, yourself and what you're a part of, both now in the material world as a conditioned soul, and in an ultimate sense, as a spiritual spark, part of the divine whole, if you understand those things, who you are and what you're a part of, then at every moment you can act perfectly. And the point he makes is, in the Vedic religion or the Vedic civilization, everything, life is religion. There's no question of religion being something you put on top of life or as a nice little seasoning. No, life is religion. People, like Prabhupada used to say in some of his books and lectures, he says things like, 90% of India is Krishna conscious. Now what did he mean by that? Does he mean that 90% of India are following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami and the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya? No, he didn't mean that. And 90% of India is not, they're not directly Krishna bhaktas. Raja Krishna. They don't worship Raja Krishna as their prime deity. No. What he was saying is that 90% of India still see their life in a spiritual way. They understand they're part of a spiritual whole, and there is a, you know, they understand Dharma. They understand that this life is part of a chain of lives, that karma is there, and that existence is ultimately taking place within the Supreme Person, or God. They're God conscious. Krishna conscious and God conscious are actually synonymous, same thing. So they understand this bigger picture. And everything they do, whether it be marriage, having children, raising children, working, they do it in a godly way, as in connection. You know, they're thinking day-to-day, on a day-to-day basis, but also in a long-term way. What is my life actually part of? What's actually the purpose of all my activities? And what this makes for is an integrated life. A life that is balanced, normal, but at the same time spiritual. There's no complex going on. You know, now I'm engaged in raising my family and so forth, but it's all an illusion. One day it's all going to pass away. People who live like this, like the Jnani, for example. The Karmi acts in the material world living in a bubble, thinking, you know, my senses, my body, my field of activities, and my desires. This is the picture of existence. It's very selfish. It's basically thinking, I need to work for me. You know, what desires are coming up, I'll act on those. I'll try and accumulate profit. I'll try and enjoy my senses, my body. This is a karmic person. Now the Jnani, one who wakes up a little bit with knowledge, they start to think, you know, this is a bit pointless. You're not really seeing the bigger picture. You know, this life of yours is temporary. All the things you're striving and getting all an anxiety about, you know, you strive intensely in the material world, it generates anxiety. This is all ultimately of no consequence. And therefore they become kind of shun secular society. And they try to extricate themselves from that, perhaps go into meditation, try and lead a lifestyle of non-doing. But neither are they integrated. It's the bhakta, it's the devotee, one who understands themselves and the bigger picture, and is at peace with that. That's the person who can lead the integrated life. We have three aspects to our being. We have, to simplify, we have a head, we have a heart, and we have hands. Now those three elements represent things. Our head represents our mind, our thinking, analyzing capacity, our planning. That's our head, our mind. We have hands, which represent our active capacity. The fact that we can get into action in the world and do things and achieve things. And then we have our heart, which is our motivation, our inspiration, our purpose for doing something. The emotional driver that pushes us on. Now an integrated person, of which the devotee should be the supreme integrated person, has all these things lined up, aligned. They're all working together, and neither one defeats the other. Now oftentimes people, you know, the hands are in action, you know, the karmi, the hands are in action. The brain isn't thinking about the whole thing, and therefore the heart is misinvested. It's invested in something that's ultimately going to give you suffering. You know, it's invested in the aspiration just to fulfill the senses. And as soon as you have that aspiration, you get thrown into duality. Pleasure, pain, both come linked together, two sides of the same coin. But the karmi, yeah, the hands and the heart are engaged, but the head is turned off. You know? The head has just been used to plan, how am I going to gratify my senses? The jnani they've kind of come to the point, I'm just going to turn off my hands and disinvest my heart because my head has seen something, you know. With my head, I've been able to analyze the pointlessness of the whole thing. Therefore, I'm going to withdraw my heart and turn off my hands. I'm going to try and become inactive. So stop activity and stop the heart investment. But the bhakta, they have all things lined up. They are in their head, they have the bigger picture of the existential situation there. They understand, yes, this life is temporary, but the senses, the mind, the body, the entire world, this is Krishna's energy. It can be used to serve Krishna. So they've got this picture. And then therefore their heart is full of love. What is that verse? Aham sabhasya prabhubhava. Mitasabham prabhatate. Iti madhva bhajantimam buddhi bhava samanvataha. That the wise who, spiritual and material worlds, they emanate from me. This is Krishna speaking. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So, seeing the bigger picture, the devotee heart wells up with love and affection for Krishna, and then their hearts go to, and then their hands go to action in the world, practical service. Whatever I'm doing, whatever ashram, devotee's not hung up about these things. What is my ashram? What is my varna? Who cares? You know, it doesn't really matter. The main thing is to know what you are and to serve Krishna. This is the peace formula. Know what you are and serve Krishna. Don't be hung up. Oh, I'm a sudra, oh, I'm a woman, I'm a this, I'm a that. Whatever you are, serve Krishna. Use what you've got. And there's no real higher or lower in the ultimate sense. Really, it just what it comes down to is, are you being yourself? Because we have our nature, we have our temporary dharma, which is according to the body, the conditioned nature. We have that. But then we have an ultimate nature. What is that ultimate nature? Servant of Krishna. Part and parcel of Krishna, servant of Krishna. Two dharmas, Sanatana Dharma and temporary dharma. So take those two things and align them. Take whatever you have now, engage it in Krishna's service, and you'll be perfectly integrated. Your heart can be full of love. You can use your mind to plan, to think, to understand, and use your hands to serve. And this makes for a very whole person. A person who's not fighting within themselves. Yeah. And people are attracted to this type of person. This type of life, the integrated life. A person who seems to know themselves. They know themselves, and they're at peace with that. They're not thinking, I'm like this, but I should be like that. No, they're just thinking, I am what I am. I am what I am. And they're peaceful with that. And the devotee should be the most integrated of persons. You know, these days people are very much interested in self-help and personal development. It's a fact, it's an eternal thing. People like to improve themselves. They like to develop good qualities. And there's many books out there and many programs you can get to try and develop good qualities. But it can get very complicated because you've got to deal with so many different things. I've got this bad habit, I've got this character flaw, I need to correct it, and then another one comes up and it just seems endless, you know. Because what you're missing is the real root. There is one button you can push to develop all good qualities. Some good qualities I just noted down here that people are attracted to. Somebody who's peaceful. You know, they're kind of just peaceful. They're at peace with who they are. They're at peace with the world and life in general. They're not real anxious and hankering to be somewhere else or for things to be in a different way. confident, they're perfectly confident, you know, sure of themselves, not self-conscious, but at the same time perfectly humble. How do you develop those two qualities together, you know? These days, the self-help industry would say you should just affirm yourself. I am great. I am powerful. I will crush the opposition. I will rise up. No, Dvoti doesn't have that. They're perfectly confident, perfectly humble. Honest. Honest about who they are. Honest about their shortcomings. You know, oh, I'm not very good at that. No, this is not one of my strengths. Honest about the limitations, even honest about, you know, fears and anxieties and things like that, natural human emotions, without, you know, feeling that they have to hide or impress people. Integrity, what you believe and are on the inside comes out on the outside, no two-faced, duplicitous. Freedom, somebody who's kind of free. You know, the mind is not bogged down with so many anxieties or false concepts. The mind, somebody who's very free and happy, joyful, somebody who's loving and affectionate, enthusiastic, very enthusiastic, very determined, very patient, at the same time very detached. His home is very surrendered. You know, what comes, comes, what doesn't come, doesn't come. Comfortable with limitations and at home with who they are. Peaceful with who they are. At home in the skin, you could say. I'm a human being right now. I'm going to be a human being, no problem. No fault with that. And free from anxiety, anger, hankering, lamentation. Now, if you take all these qualities and try and go, oh my God, how am I going to do all these? How am I going to act peaceful? How am I going to do this? Try and, from the outside in, try and develop these qualities. It's very difficult. It's like trying to water the leaves of a tree. But the good news is there's a one button you can push. And all these qualities, if you push that one button, all these qualities will automatically blossom in you. And that thing is just to know who you are and see the bigger picture. And what that translates into is be a devotee. You are, live to serve and love Krishna. Think of yourself as a servant of Krishna. If you have that at the very core of your self-identity, I am a servant of Krishna. This whole world is Krishna's energy. I should be a servant of Krishna. If you really see the world in that way, then automatically these things will come out. You'll automatically be peaceful. You understand the extent of your responsibility is to try your best to love and serve Krishna. The result, that's up to Krishna. The extent of my influence and control is simply myself, you know. All I can really do is try and be a devotee and try my best to serve Krishna. Things outside of that, I can't control. I'll do my best to bring around an appropriate result for Krishna's service. I'll do my best, you know, but then my responsibility ends. Therefore, peaceful. Confident, perfectly confident, the devotee is, because they feel Krishna's support, their inner identities are aligned. And once you know that life is about service, life is not about sense gratification, once you know that, you know it. Once you've experienced that, you know it. You know you'll be happy. And also because you don't have selfish motivations, you don't have to try and impress people. You just, I am what I am, I'm a servant of Krishna, that's what I am. If you understand that, and you surrender to that idea, then you'll be perfectly confident. What's to be an anxiety about? I'm simply a servant of Krishna. And Krishna is supporting me, because Krishna says that. And even if something doesn't happen, something doesn't go my way, then that's Krishna's will. Perfect surrender equals perfect liberation. Same time, perfectly humble. I am not the doer. I am nothing actually. And I don't aspire to be anything. I just want to be a servant of Krishna. Therefore, humble. Honest. No need to lie. No need to hide. Yeah. Integrity. Freedom. Perfect surrender leads to perfect liberation. A deep point, but it's true. You become perfectly surrendered, you become perfectly liberated from anxiety. Anxiety, at its root, all situations of anxiety can be analyzed as hankering or desiring some something outside of your influence. That's what anxiety is. Desiring something to happen that's outside of your influence. Outside of something outside of your control, you want to control it. That's what anxiety comes from. If you give up that, then you become perfectly peaceful and you become free. The devotee is also joyful because of this freedom. And simply because they're serving Krishna, Krishna is pleased that the devotee's heart becomes joyful and dances. Affectionate, loving devotees have these qualities because they see everybody is a part and parcel of Krishna. They have affection for Krishna. Therefore, it goes to everyone else. They're enthusiastic because they're inspired by being a servant of Krishna. Determined. You know, when you know something and your allegiance is to Dharma, virtue, godliness, and being a servant, when your allegiance is thus, you will die for that, you know. Your determination will be unbreakable. And we see that godly personalities in the history of the world, they're willing to die for their, for what they know is right. And something they know is so pure and so beautiful, they'll die for that. Determination unbreakable. Perfect determination. Perfectly patient as well. Krishna is time, all things will come in time if Krishna wills. I'm not trying to achieve some result that's greater than I, you know, I'm not trying to achieve a result faster than time will bring it. Again, that's anxiety. Mm-hmm. Trying to achieve something that's outside of your control. If time is bringing something in a certain at a certain pace, and you try and want that to speed up, you become frustrated. Mm-hmm. You become in anxiety. Isn't it patient? Surrendered, comfortable with limitations. These are all qualities that develop in a devotee. People look at the devotees, they should. Devotees are well integrated. They should look at it and see, you're a very well integrated person. You're very balanced. You know, you seem to be yourself. You know yourself and you're at home with them. You're peaceful about that. So that is the supremely attractive quality. Because ultimately, if we accept the Krishna conscious philosophy, the Krishna conscious lifestyle, the point is not to just to adopt some belief. The point is to transform, to actually become the ideal that is presented in Krishna consciousness, to become a devotee. If you do that, become a devotee, if your heart is perfectly aligned with the absolute truth, then your existence is perfect. There's nothing really more to do except to be that. So, yeah, these are some points mainly on Vidyananda Das Goswami's purport about Dharma. Seeing Dharma as a way of life. Seeing the bigger picture, the way of things, aligning with that, surrendering to that. The way things are, that's Krishna's will. Therefore, I should align my will with Krishna's will. And then, I'll be happy, automatically. I will have harmony. There'll be harmony. And that actually becoming God conscious, seeing everything in that consciousness, awareness of Krishna. Yeah, that is an integrated life. That is religious life. Because life is religion. That's the Vedic idea. Life is religion. Everything should be done in a religious way. I.e. in God consciousness. For the higher ultimate purpose. Not just for temporary fleeting purposes. Thank you so much. Any questions or comments on this? These points? Yes, Ruth? It's a contradiction. It's a contradiction of terms.
So many, like cheating.
That just means that.
It's really, really sad that they're trying to, bring in their own philosophy. But it's, it's fairly simple.
That's what Prabhupada said, philosophy without religion is mental speculation. Because it doesn't do anything. Wow, that's so cool. What about this idea? You explore the idea, but then you don't do anything. Religion means you put everything into action in your day-to-day life. The God without religion, that's it's a contradiction of terms.
It's just that people want religion without God, but they just don't want God to be a witness of their activities.
Well, they might have been thinking without the dogmatic nonsense that can go with religion. That's maybe what they meant by the word religion. But if you take it in Hridayananda Das Goswami's parlance, you say God without Dharma is meaningless. You see, Dharma means God's law. So God without his law or way of doing things, it's completely disintegrated. Yeah, all sorts of concoctions are coming out these days. Anything else? No question? No comment?
When you are faced with an awkward situation, like Dharma and Dhanvi, she was faced, so it naturally upsets you. So is there any way you can...
Well, I think a devotee doesn't mind being upset, Sometimes the mind will... Because all emotions are there in Krishna's service. I remember once, I was in Sydney, at the temple, and I was doing some yoga and meditating and things, and this temple president, he came in and said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm doing some yoga, meditating, I feel very peaceful and happy. And he said, that's nonsense. He said, a devotee intentionally takes on the anxiety for Krishna's service. While you're sitting here blissing out, 100 people just walked past outside on their way to hell. What are you doing for them? And then he said, the gopis, they had so much anxiety for Krishna. So all emotions are there. That's the thing. We don't have to deny any part of ourselves in Krishna consciousness. We just need to dovetail it. Don't deny any part of yourself. You be a human being. That's what you are for now. You're also spirit soul, but use your human condition to serve. So therefore, emotions, love, anxiety, you can use all that, but just engage in Krishna's service. So that's what Rukmini did. She was anxious because I want Krishna, I want close association with Krishna. And she used that anxiety to motivate her to action. Sometimes we do that, we're thinking, we must, you know, we must push through lethargy. Krishna must be served. He must be served better. Prabhupada's mission must be executed. And we get fired up. What is this complacency? Let's get up. We must do it. So we use that emotion of frustration with slow moving. We use it to serve.
You can't be complacent.
Yeah, you can't be complacent. But any emotion, you know. Anger. I was reading a Nectar instruction just the other day. The devotee doesn't become angry on his own behalf. He becomes angry to see people blaspheme Krishna, all the devotees. Or he might become angry about people destroying themselves because of lack of God consciousness.
Because he's like a philosopher about the Bombay situation.
Yeah, he became angry.
How quickly he controlled.
Yeah. Yeah. So then, yeah, that's what I'm trying. That's my whole thesis, is that we don't have to deny any part of ourselves. We just need to be a devotee. At our core, if we're devoted, then we can just be ourselves. Everything perfect. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu?
It feels like to me that in generally the thoughts of the people are moving, but the time is not. I was analyzing that the people who are entangled and one who is liberated, fully surrendered to Krishna and in Krishna consciousness.
Mm. Well, ultimately, the spirit soul is outside time. It's simply the spirit soul is never born, never destroyed. It exists in an internal context. It's the material energy in the form of our body and mind which is moving under time. So, you know, we actually stay the same. For us, you know, it's a horrible cliche, but it's actually profoundly true that there is only one moment. What is that? Now. There's only one moment. That moment is now. If I asked you 10 years ago, what's the time, Jitendra? You could say, it's now. If I asked you in 60 years, what's the time, you could say, it's right now. Because when I asked you, it would be that time. Just like I asked you now. So that's the situation of consciousness. It exists in an eternal now moment. But the field we're watching, the body and the mind, that is moving under time. That is changing. But consciousness is actually outside of time. So the field is transforming under the influence of time. All it is changing, that's all. And because the conditioned soul is attached to the temporary manifestation and identifying with the temporary manifestation, they think my time is running out. I want to bring about a certain effect in time in my life. So the thoughts are bound up in the temporary display in the field of activities. Whereas the devotee, you know, they're detached because they're thinking, you know, it's always going to be this way, which is, I am spirit soul, I am eternal, it's always going to be like this. My field of experience is Krishna's energy, and I should use the energy to serve Krishna. Devotee knows, this is always going to be the way it is. Whether I'm a small boy, an old man, this life, next life, material world, spiritual world, this is always the situation. This is the eternal reality. And seeing like that, the devotee is liberated. What's the rush? You know, it's the same as it'll always be. whether I'm old or young, you know. So therefore the devotee is steady and stable because they're surrendered. This is the existential situation. I have a material body. According to nature, it's going to go through certain phases, but it doesn't change the fact that I am Krishna's service. This is Krishna's energy. Krishna's energy should be used to serve Krishna. Therefore, the devotee is free. The thoughts of the non-devotees, they're in anxiety. You know, my body's getting old. It shouldn't be like that. Therefore, there's a fundamental clash with the divine will or the dharma, the way of things, and their personal will, and that causes anxiety. That's why if you analyze it to the very essence, anxiety is trying to control something that's outside of your control. Anytime you feel anxiety, you can analyze it in this light and you'll see, yes, I'm trying to control something that's outside of my control. I'm not surrendered to Krishna's will. And what is my responsibility? To be a devotee? To live, to serve, and love Krishna. If I do that, then my job is done. I've done. Do your best. Do your best, leave the result up to Krishna. That's the ultimate peace formula. Is that your question is quite a... You're a very philosophical person, so... Your question is quite profound, so I hope that gave you some angle of interest. Any other points? Okay, thank you so much. Contrast Srimad Bhagavatam.